Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. On April 11th, United Nations diplomats lit five white candles and observed a moment of silence on the 18th anniversary of the start of the Rwandan genocide. More than 500,000 people were murdered in reaction to the April 6, 1994 shooting down of the president's plane. Members of the Tutsi tribe and moderate members of the Hutu tribe were killed by extremist Hutus with the help of the Hutu government. It ended when Tutsi-led rebels staged a coup d'etat. How much has changed in Rwanda in 18 years? Brentwood native Katie Newman will find out soon. This MTSU double major in philosophy and international relations will be traveling to Rwanda this fall for what promises to be a fascinating study abroad experience. We'll talk to Katie about her anticipation and preparation after this communication from MTSUnews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. Adventures in Learning, an annual four-week program for adults aged 50 and older, is scheduled to begin Monday, September 10th at First United Methodist Church, located at 265 West Thompson Lane in Murfreesboro. Current and retired MTSU personnel, once again, will play major roles in this year's lectures. Scheduled topics include China, literature, archaeology, and religion. And three insurance professionals have been recognized for their stellar insurance careers with induction into the Robert E. Musto Tennessee Insurance Hall of Fame at MTSU. The 2012 ceremony for George Gardner, Christy Reeves, and Ray Thomas was held August 2nd. 48 people have been inducted into the hall since inception. For MTSU News at any time, go to MTSUnews.com.
Katie, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We have study abroad students going all around the world, Japan, France, England, Australia. Why Rwanda?
Well, I guess my first semester here at MTSU, in my intro to political science class, I guess we watched a documentary called The Ghosts of Rwanda, which is actually a really, really great documentary. I think everyone should watch that if they're interested in learning more about the history of Rwanda and more facts about the genocide. But when I watched that film, I got really interested in Rwanda in general, so I started doing more of my own research on it. And when I was considering applying for a study abroad, I first thought of Rwanda initially, but I noticed that MTSU didn't have any study abroad programs in Rwanda, so I kind of gave up on that, and I was actually planning to go to France for a while to study French instead. But this past summer, I was at I was interning in Washington, D.C., and while I was there, I had the opportunity to go to a leadership conference at the Holocaust Museum, at which Carl Wilkins was speaking, and he just visited campus, obviously, recently. And he kind of motivated me to look further for options to study abroad in Rwanda, just because his story is so fascinating and compelling. And I was luckily able to find an independent program that MTSU has approved to let me study abroad there. It's just not through MTSU.
So how did you come to find this particular independent program? Did Wilkins point it out to you?
Actually, I just kind of Googled it, and I found it, fortunately. So that's really all there was to it.
Carl Wilkins, as you mentioned, the director of World Outside My Shoes, visited this campus in March. He was the only American to remain in Rwanda after the genocide started. He spoke glowingly in our discussions with him about how the country has changed and how impressed he was with current government leaders. What did you learn from Wilkins when he was here?
I learned one of the facts that he said that really stuck in my mind was that Rwanda is now entirely self-sufficient as far as food production goes. And I think that's something that we don't think of. When we think of Africa, we want to tend to generalize Africa and all of the states within it. But when you look at Rwanda, it really does represent a success story, because just a little over 10 years ago, they had suffered this horrible genocide, and now they're moving forward. They're entirely self-sufficient in food. The country is mostly politically stable at this point. It's a safe place to travel now.
The fact that it is politically stable enough to even entertain the notion of study abroad programs inviting college students from the West to come to the country speaks volumes about how far it has come. Mm-hmm. And the faith that Mr. Wilkins puts in the current president is not misplaced. What was your parents' reaction when you told them you wanted to do this?
My mom was just kind of quiet. I think because she was thinking about it. My dad was horrified. they're very supportive now, though. We talked about it a lot. I think they kind of had in their minds that I was going to France. You know, France is just, it's a Western European country, and we all know those places are safe. We travel there for family vacations. We travel there on school trips. We travel there for any number of reasons, and we understand those places are safe. But when you say to your parents, I want to go to Africa to study abroad, they have a bit of a, a little bit of a setback, I guess.
Even though we're not talking about Syria, which is in colossal upheaval right now. We're not talking about Yemen, which is a breeding ground for terrorism. We are talking about a country that was the scene of god-awful horror, and perhaps your mother's reaction or your parents' reaction was because of the movie Hotel Rwanda. If you saw the movie, tell me what of it was real and what of it was Hollywood from your understanding.
Well, I actually haven't seen the movie because I'm not a very big movie person. People have to force me to watch movies most of the time. My dad has seen the movie, though, and he said it was very well done. So from my understanding, it's been a good movie, and I know that Carl Wilkins has also seen the movie, and he seems to think it was a fairly good representation of what happened. So
there is a scene in Hotel Rwanda in which Don Cheadle steps out of an all-terrain vehicle because he doesn't understand why the road that he's traveling on is so bumpy. And when he steps out of the door on the passenger side, he is stepping on human skulls and human bones. And so that's, of course, Hotel Rwanda covers the period of the genocide. What will you be doing there, and where will you stay?
Well, it's actually kind of a varied program. It's very much an interdisciplinary approach to a study abroad program. I'm not actually going to be at a particular university. The program that I'm going through is called SIT, and they're an independent organization. They're based in Vermont, actually, in the United States, and they have several study abroad programs all over the world. But this particular program, for the most part, I'll be in Kigali, which is the capital of Rwanda. But they do site visits to various sites that were important in the genocide, like churches where massacres were committed and where there are now memorials. So we travel around the country to do those types of things. And for 2 weeks of the program, we actually visit Uganda to visit an internally displaced persons camp and to understand more about the conflict that's been going on there. As far as where I'll be staying, for a large part, they have us in dorm-like places and hotels. But for about 6 weeks of the 16 that I'll be there, I will stay with a host family. So I will get to stay with a Rwandan family for a lot of the time that I'm there.
Do you have any idea whether this will be a village, a middle-class, middle-sized town, or do you have any idea what, you know, the socioeconomic context of the of your living quarters is going to be?
Well, from what I've gathered from SIT, most of the homestay families are all from Kigali, so that's part of the time that we'll be in Kigali is the homestay. And they have on their website the information that they have, and from what I've gathered from talking to people is that most of the families are generally just middle-class families. A lot of families have younger children who are in school, and I think that's one of their big things is they like for the families to have children, some of whom are maybe teenagers, because that, they can be helpful for the study abroad students to have somebody to help them get around and familiarize themselves with a new place.
Any trepidation about going to Uganda?
Honestly, no, but I'm not really one of those people who gets anxious about things like that. I mean, I understand the risks involved and I understand the need for safety, but I think to worry about something is just not really, there's no point in worrying about something that I can't necessarily control. I can do everything within my power to make sure that I'm safe and I behave in a manner appropriate to that country's condition while I'm there, but ultimately that's not in my hands.
We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record after this.
The MTSU Educational Talent Search, or METS, reaches out to students in grades 6 through 12 in Coffee, Grundy, and Warren counties. We provide youngsters who have college potential with educational and financial aid counseling and guide them as they determine their educational and career goals. More than 95% of Educational Talent Search students graduate from high school and more than 79% enroll in post-secondary education. This is METS Coordinator Debbie Frisbee.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with MTSU student Katie Newman, who will be going to Rwanda this fall for probably the most unique study abroad experience that has ever happened under MTSU's auspices, even though it's happening through an entity that is not necessarily connected with MTSU, but has MTSU's approval. Have you traveled a great deal before? I mean, this is not your first time abroad, but what is the extent of your international traveling experience?
Actually, that's part of the reason why I'm so excited about study abroad. I've never been out of the country for longer than about 10 days, so about a week and a half at a time. And I've traveled to Western Europe, and the furthest place and the most non-Western that I've ever traveled has been to Moscow recently this spring for a model UN conference through MTSU. So this is going to be something very different for me. Even Moscow is still a very European city, and it's very modern. And even though a lot of the people don't speak English, it's still fairly easy to get around there. And I think this is going to be a very big difference.
And while you were in Moscow, you had the benefit of Dr. Andrei Korobkov, who is a native Muscovite and who could translate everything for you, who knows the territory frontwards and backwards.
He was with us for part of the time, which was really wonderful. He was able to show us around Moscow and everything. And one of the students who traveled with us also studies Russian here at MTSU, so he was a great help as well with reading signs and translating menus for us, just basic things.
But since you have been abroad before, you're pretty well up on the necessity of shots, the legalities that you have to go through with passports and visas, how to pack and how not to pack, all of those things. I mean, you don't enter this situation as a neophyte. That having been said, though, going to Rwanda and going to France are two completely different things. You're going to have to pack in a different way. I'm sure there'll be different rules and regulations about what you can take into and out of the country. Have you boned up on any of that stuff yet?
A lot of the major restriction that I've run into is with regards to vaccinations. Actually, you have to absolutely have to have a yellow fever vaccination and a certificate of vaccination to enter the country at all. That's really the main restriction they place on it. Nothing could possibly be harder than trying to get a visa to go to Russia, to be honest. And actually, Rwanda's great because U.S. citizens do not need a visa to go to Rwanda unless they're staying for longer than 90 days. And since I will be leaving the country for 2 weeks to go to Uganda, I will never actually hit that 90-day mark, which is nice. That means I won't actually have to apply for a visa.
When you go to Rwanda, I find it interesting that you're actually going to be able to visit sites that are relevant to the genocide, which is one of the most horrendous activities in Africa's history, in all of human history, period. You don't anticipate any attempt by the Rwandan government to suppress information or to try to downplay the significance of the event or to in any way obscure your historical appreciation of the genocide?
That's a good question. I don't foresee that happening, particularly because the government that's in power now with President Kagame, that's actually part of the resistance movement that were fighting against the perpetrators of the genocide. They are mostly Tutsis. They were part of the Rwandan Patriotic Front. And that's the group that actually came in and was able to end the genocide. So I think that the only area in which they're questionable is trying to conceal their own atrocities, because we can't, when we're evaluating genocide, we can't put the blame fully on Hutus or extremist Hutus. We have to recognize that the RPF is also guilty of crimes in the same way that the Hutus were. It's just not on the same scale. So I think that's the only way in which we could potentially question the government.
I interviewed a young woman about the time she spent in a Rwandan refugee camp. And I asked her off the air if she was Hutu or Tutsi, and she didn't want to say. Not because she thought it would necessarily color my impression of her, but because she still feels, even in this country, that she could be subject to some kind of harm if she identified herself with her particular tribe. Do you think there's still some of that tension going on there? I mean, and she's in the United States. She's not in country.
I think it's hard to say without actually having been there, because when you're reading scholarly research and things like that, about half of them will deny that that ethnic tension remains, and half of them will say that it's still there and it's still an active force in Rwandan society. But I think it's important to recognize that originally in Rwanda, these ethnic differences between Hutu and Tutsi, they weren't really significant in the way that we think that they are. The first real way that they were signified in society was through the use of the ID cards, which were a major tool in the genocide to tell who was Hutu and who was Tutsi, because it said on the ID card what your particular ethnicity was. Those ID cards were actually introduced by the Belgians, who are an outside colonizing force. It wasn't something that was organic to the Rwandan community to identify with these ethnic differences. So I think that's definitely an important factor to recognize when we're considering whether or not they're still in play. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily unreasonable to think that there would still be some tensions just because it was such a major event.
If it was the ID cards were a holdover from Western colonization, why was the native Rwandans' ire and outrage not directed at the white Westerners who originally came in to what used to be called the Belgian Congo and tried to tell them what to do?
That's a good question. Actually, at the start of the genocide, when Belgium still had several troops and they still had forces in Rwanda, the Belgian forces were targeted and several of them were killed. And that is a lot of the reason why Belgium pulled out at the beginning of the genocide and refused to stay in the country, because their troops were killed. But I think that when you're considering that, it's kind of a strange question, because the genocide, the way it began, it was a minority of Hutu extremists. And maybe their anger was misplaced, but they saw the Tutsis as wealthy. They had cows, which are a symbol of wealth in Rwanda. And they saw the Tutsis as wealthy, their minority. And the Tutsis had traditionally been those that the Western powers had put in power when they were occupying Rwanda. So the anger against the Tutsis was kind of a misplaced anger towards the Western colonizing powers. And that was a lot of what spawned the genocide against them.
Do you think that most of the rest of the world, particularly the Western world, which was very slow to get news of the fact that that there was even a genocide going on in Rwanda, realizes how much the country has changed? Or do you think they still have a Rwanda equals genocide image going on in their heads?
Well, I don't know that they necessarily have the idea that Rwanda equals genocide, but I don't think that they have a really good idea of how much it really has changed, just because Rwanda isn't someplace that we hear about every day in the news, and it's not necessarily someplace that we're particularly concerned with its progress. Mm-hmm. So we're just not on the receiving end of a lot of information for that.
When you watched the documentary that you said inspired you to want to go to Rwanda, did you make any analogies in your head between the genocide that was going on there and other situations that you know of around the world, the ethnic cleansing in Bosnia of the 80s, of course, the Holocaust of World War II, the Janjaweed attacking the South Sudanese, mm-hmm. situations like that?
Yes, and that was a lot of the reason why it was so interesting to me, because I think it's very important for everyone, but especially for students, to realize that these issues are related, and each case of genocide is different in some way. It's perpetrated by a different group of people for a different reason against a different group of people, but there are some underlying factors that are the same. And to recognize genocide, we have to be aware of those factors, because otherwise we're never going to be able to recognize it when it begins again. After the Holocaust, we said never again, and it happened again and again and again, and it could still be happening in the Sudan right now. And I think that we definitely have to be more aware of the connections between all of these different events, or we're never going to be able to prevent them in the future.
We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
The Middle Tennessee State University Women's Studies Research Series features compelling monthly talks on gender-related topics by faculty and graduate students. The series offers a chance to learn about research in progress and to chat with faculty in an informal setting. All lectures are free and open to the public and are held on the MTSU campus. This is Associate Professor of Journalism, Dr. Jane Marcellus.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Katie Newman is our guest. She's an MTSU student from Brentwood, and she'll be going to Rwanda this fall for a study abroad experience. And you have a double major, international relations and philosophy. Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
That's a very good question. I actually started out with just the international relations, and I had, you know, two minors to go with that. But I took an intro to philosophy class as one of my general education courses about 2 years ago, and I just fell in love. So I dropped the extra minors, and fortunately I had a lot of credits, so I had the time to make philosophy a second major, and I'm very thankful for that.
So you'll be getting 2 degrees when you graduate?
Yes.
Will you be getting both degrees at the same time?
Yes, ma'am. Next May is when I graduate.
Okay. Well, as you know, the Tennessee Board of Regents has approved an international relations master's degree program for MTSU, which will start here in the fall. Would you be interested in getting your master's in IR here?
You know, it's very tempting, but I'm actually hoping to go to graduate school for philosophy and not for international relations, and I'm hoping to go PhD track instead of just master's, but I'm definitely very, very excited about the master's program here at MTSU. I think it's absolutely wonderful, and our department's very excited about it.
Talk a little bit about the teachers that you have had under the IR major who have broadened your understanding of world affairs.
I can think of two in particular. My advisor is Dr. Karen Peterson, and I've had her for a couple of classes, and she also is the advisor for our Model United Nations team, so I've worked with her a lot since I've been a freshman here, really, and she's always been absolutely wonderful. She's very encouraging. When I came into her office and told her that I wanted to study abroad in Rwanda, she said, "I think that's great." And that was one of the only reactions I got that was not confused or filled with trepidation, I guess. Uh-huh. And the other professor that I've had, he is the one that really inspired me to continue looking into Rwanda, is Dr. David Carlton. And he actually was my intro to political science professor. And he also teaches a course on political violence and terrorism, which spends about a good portion of the course on studying genocide. And being able to study it in such depth and detail in that class was really rewarding for me, and that was a definite part of the factor into my decision to study abroad in Rwanda.
How about your philosophy professors?
They're all wonderful. It's hard to say just one.
It's a small department. But,
yes, it's a very small department, but they're all absolutely wonderful. I guess the professor that I've taken the most and has been most influential on me as a person in general is Dr. Jack Purcell, and he was my intro to philosophy professor, and I've taken several classes with him since then, so he's definitely been very encouraging as well.
How do these two particular majors intersect for you in terms of making you who you are and what you intend to do with your life in the future?
Well, I think international relations, though it's not necessarily what I want to pursue in graduate school, I think that international relations is a wonderful major for anyone, regardless of what they want to go into, because it gives you a different perspective on the world, and it gives you more information on what's going on in the world that you don't get necessarily through other majors, and you don't get just by watching local news or national news even. And international relations is one way to really broaden your horizons. I don't know that I would have considered studying abroad in Rwanda if I was only a philosophy major. So I think that they're multifaceted in that way. And one of the main things I've learned in philosophy is how important it is to pay attention to everything. And that clearly ties into international relations. You have to pay attention first and foremost to yourself, but you also have to pay attention to everything that's happening around you, because everything is important in that way.
It's not just that you could make a cultural faux pas if you don't pay attention. Mm-hmm. You could really, truly offend someone without realizing it, mm-hmm. and that could lead to terrible complications. Let's talk about the media when we come back. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Concrete Industry Management Program at MTSU fills the need for trained personnel who know concrete technology and techniques. Our alumni go into the marketplace grounded in basic math and science and able to promote products or services related to the industry. Our participation in the Academic Common Market ensures talented students in other states a chance to enroll on an in-state tuition basis. This is Dr. Heather Brown, Director of the program.
To find out more information on this or other university programs, visit mtsunews.com.
Katie Newman is our guest, and she's going to Rwanda in the fall for study abroad. It was a documentary, not a television program or anything in the popular mainstream media, that really brought you to a new awareness of Rwanda. What what do you think is the impact on the United States of not having as much information about other countries?
I think first and foremost, it narrows our awareness and it kind of dulls our perception of events around the world. Rwanda is an obvious case of where we just didn't get a lot of information. And part of that, whether it be a good or a bad thing, was because Rwanda was not in the United States' interests at the time. It simply didn't matter to us what was happening there. So we filter our information in that way. And right now, we've done a bit, I guess, we've gotten more information with things going on in the Arab Spring, in Egypt, in Syria, in Yemen, all of the different protests. But even with regards to Syria, we don't get the full information that international news sources are providing. For like what you said, the BBC and Al Jazeera also, they provide a lot more information than what we're getting. It's dulled down, so we don't realize the full horror of what's going on.
Do you like to check out things going on in other countries with an eye to how they might affect our own American culture, or are you interested in it for its own sake?
I think I'm interested in it for its own sake, definitely, but I think that because I've grown up in America, I can't help but look at it in that way and from that perspective. It's just something that naturally happens when I'm looking at maybe say the economic crisis in Greece, I naturally view it in a way as to how does this affect me or my country. But I think that first and foremost, I always try to look at it as an issue in and of its own sake. Like, how does it affect the people of Greece? That's what's most important in that particular issue.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to do after you complete your PhD? Would you like to work? Would you like to teach? Would you like to work for an NGO? Would you like to go into business? What do you want to do?
Well, I've actually worked for an NGO before, and while I can say that that's admirable work and I admire the people that do that, I just don't think I could do it. It's a lot of paperwork, and it's a definite struggle, so I don't think that would necessarily be for me. I would certainly enjoy teaching at the university level. I'm not really picky, honestly. I think I could be happy doing a variety of different things, and so whether I end up teaching or whether I end up doing something else, we'll just have to see. But I think I'll be happy either way.
Have you been thinking far enough ahead to think about what institutions you'd consider going to for graduate school?
Well, originally I was considering going to graduate school for political theory, so still within the political science realm. So I had several institutions, you know, listed out for that. But now that I'm considering going for philosophy, it's kind of changed the types of institutions that I'm going to be considering, since it's a different department. So, mm-hmm. You know, institutions differ in their graduate programs, the strength in that way. So I've kind of had to start fresh this semester, so I'm just getting started on my graduate school search.
You talked about political philosophy. We have John Maynor and Rob McDaniel in the political science department who teach philosophy. Did you take any courses from either of them?
I have taken one class with Dr. Maynor, and I've actually taken five with poor Dr. McDaniel.
You've got me beat. I only took four from him.
Yes, I took five. I'm in my fifth one right now, I should say.
He's amazing, isn't he?
Yes, he's an incredible professor.
Do you find any kind of crossover between what you learn in political philosophy course and what you learn in philosophy courses from the Department of Philosophy?
Oh, yes, very much. So actually, last semester I had overlap. I took ancient political theory and ancient philosophy at the same time, and this semester I took modern political theory and modern philosophy at the same time. So there's a good bit of overlap, but there are some thinkers who we read in the political theory classes who are very overtly political.
Right.
And a lot of times the professors in the philosophy department will either skip those thinkers in favor of others, or just kind of skip over the political aspects in favor of different aspects of their philosophies. So there's definitely a lot of overlap, but it's a different approach in each class.
You might not necessarily get Kierkegaard in the political philosophy class, and you might not necessarily get Judith Sklar or Hannah Arendt in the philosophy class, mm-hmm. but you'll probably get John Stuart Mill in both.
Yes, I actually did get Mill in both.
Good luck in Rwanda, and hope you have a wonderful time.
Thank you.
Katie Newman, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.